Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. In today's show, we have William George, another lighting designer, Greg. William has been a photographer, an interior designer, an art historian, a theatrical set and lighting designer, and a successful entrepreneur in the lighting and the beauty industry. He has also loved lighting and design and brings his fresh perspective and design sensibility to light and home in Santa Barbara, California. Before we get to that conversation, though, Greg Eric, we got to go to ETI. SSL.com.
That's right. Large lighting manufacturer with a lot of options. And what I look to them a lot for is flush mounted fixtures. So anything round, anything linear, they've got wrap fixtures, they've got round cloud styles, they've got decorative, they've got their night lighter on it too, which gives you that nice glow around the ring. Something very unique that I don't see anywhere else really. And then one of my favorite lights, and the original reason I knew about these guys, was their spin light. They can open incandescent socket fixture and turn it into a fixture just by screwing in a bulb slash fixture with a spin light. Pretty cool product.
Swanky stuff, creative solutions down at ETI, SSL.com. Of course, they're members of the great and powerful National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's right. You got light bulbs in a warehouse? You sell them over the counter? You sell them online? You sell them on the internet? You sell them on the phone on Amazon? But they're in your warehouse? Then you can be a nailed member. That's right. You go to NAILD.org, Greg. That's right. If you want to be a nailed member and you got light bulbs in a warehouse and you want to influence policy in the lighting industry, you want to get involved and you want to give back, nailed.org. William George, welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Hi, thank you.
You say in the notes I read here that you're finally in the profession you were meant to be in. How'd that happen? What's your profession? Let's go.
Well, I spent 20 or 30 years doing other things. I started off studying design and then ended up opening up a hair salon that took over my life for 14 years, and did that in Boston and in Newbury Street, and enjoyed that while it was good. And then the market crashed, and I was looking at my life and deciding what I want to do next. So I went back to design, which was really my first love.
And so you're a lighting designer now. I see you're in a showroom, it looks like. Tell us what's going
Yes,
on
this is my
behind you.
showroom. Yeah, so I've got lighting, I've got home goods, I've got furniture, rugs, gifts. It's like a little design center.
Okay, and
And
never
people
mind.
come there to start off designing their homes, their businesses. What kind of clients do you have?
So I've lots of different clients. So I've got a lot of homeowners that are doing renovations with a single room or a whole house. I do a lot of new builds where I design the entire lighting plan for the whole house, and then also do the landscape lighting afterwards. But if somebody comes in and just needs a fixture, a new bathroom fixture or a new chandelier, I work with those clients as well.
So when you do a home, I assume you go to the house. Is that right? Or is that not always the case?
Yes and no. So sometimes there isn't a house yet. Sometimes we're working from plans.
Ah, okay, right.
So
Okay, that makes sense.
And when people are working with a lighting designer and they're doing a new build or even a big renovation, they should get the lighting designer in fairly early. Lots of times I'm brought in at the tail end after a lot of decisions already made, or even after the walls are even up, and there's not a lot of leeway for any interesting or creative lighting. Because once the rough electrical is done, it's kind of done unless you want to pay for a big change order.
And Mike and I we've talked about it before when we've traveled and things, and good lighting makes a huge difference. And
Oh, yeah.
I think about it a lot at my house where I live. I'm there most of the time when I'm not somewhere else. And I look up and I see, okay, I've got recessed can lights everywhere because I'm a light bulb dork and I know how to fix that. I know what they are. I know what they look like. But do they look great? A vaulted ceiling, recessed cans everywhere? Probably not. I could have probably done better.
It, I
But
think, I think recessed lights are used incorrectly 90% of the time. There's the tendency is for an architect or a builder to just do a grid of recessed lights and light the whole room that way, which is basically, harsh over your head light. It's like a spotlight. Most people only turn on those lights when they're cleaning, and they don't like if they're in the space. Who wants a light shining on their head? So the way that I use recessed lights is mostly to light the perimeter, to light the walls, to light art, to light architectural features. sometimes a spotlight, a particular piece of furniture, like a table or a counter, and so that you're enveloping your environment and the perimeter with light and not lighting you, because you don't need light on you. You need light on what you're looking at.
I think it's particularly bad with flat panels. What that effect you're talking about, when you have a ceiling full of flat panels, it's almost like that's something that got old really, really fast, William. You know, like it came out like 6-7 years ago, and now if I look at it, it's like, oh my God, what did they do?
I don't think that was ever a good look. Yeah, I think that was that's very institutional. You know, that's what you should have in a library or an office. You know, it's not. I mean, it's great even light. It's like, you know, even light like on an overcast day. You're getting light everywhere, not a lot of shadows. But the thing that makes light interesting are the shadows. Like if everything is brightly lit, you don't really, everything is gets equal attention. But if you have some dimness, you have some shadow, you have some different levels of light where you're focusing your attention on a work of art or a cool column in your home or something, you know, some feature, then it becomes more interesting and light aids your eye and look, you know, you want the light to highlight things.
So contrast is at the heart of your practice then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Both contrast in terms of lighting and contrast in terms of my perspective versus other lighting designers or architects or interior designers' perspectives.
Color temperature. Are you defaulting to lower Kelvin temperatures or are you using tunable stuff? Where's your position on that?
I think tunable is great, but it takes the right client for them to really understand it and to use it. Mm. I think most clients, you know, they might want warm dim. They like the idea of it, but then when it comes to actually using it, it can become a problem. I had to actually take out an entire installation of warm dim recess lights because the client spent most, like the rooms were dim, like really low most of the time. And sometime with warm dim, the lower register, you know, you're still getting, you know, in most cases, like 10% of the light. So that times 30 can be a bright version of that low level. And that can also often be very orange. So you end up this like flaming orange room.
Yes.
And that's not pleasant for anybody. You know, when you get that orange and it's like down to 0 or 1%, that's a different story. But when it's 10% and it's orange, that's pretty hideous. So we have to take that out.
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right. Like you're so right about that. So if you start with like a warm dim that's 3,000 at 2,000, say, it's really nasty 2/3 of the way into the dim. Like it looks kind of weird. It looks like a nasty orange color. You're right. It's not a true reflection of how incandescent or halogen would do it. Do you miss incandescent and halogen? Be honest with me.
I miss the way they perform. But I feel like the technology is beginning to get closer and closer to that same performance. You know, if you have a really high-end recessed light that goes down to zero and it's warm dimming, that's a beautiful light and it can be just like a halogen. But if you don't go down to 0 or 1%, you know, you're never going to mimic a halogen bulb.
So how did you, I think you said you had a hair salon before, is that right?
Yes, yeah. For 14 years, I had hair salons in Boston, James Joseph Salon and James Joseph Studio. I had three locations and I had 77 employees. Oof. And it was a big operation, but you know, you have 77 employees, it's 77 headaches. And when I, you know, was recreating my life and going back into design, I'm basically a one man show and I have a friend of mine helps me out once in a while, but for the most part, it's just me.
I envy
you. There's some envy there. Yeah.
I envy you totally on that. Like I would say the hardest part of being an entrepreneur for me is working with the people. And I love them. It's not that I don't like the people. I agree. But it's just like motivating them, paying them and doing all the stuff that involves them is such an administrative taxing drain sometimes. You got to write them up. You know, here's form 103, okay?
Yeah.
How not to be a shitbird, okay? Let's talk about that.
That's a job on top of your job, you know?
Yes.
So yeah.
Man.
And I ended up being administrator and not doing anything creative when I had that many employees. And I had managers underneath me that were doing a lot of the work, but still it ended up being, you know, a full-time job just managing the employees.
Mm. So what made you decide lighting design?
Yeah. So When I was in design school, I went to college and got a degree in art history and psychology. And then I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I went back to school for interior design. And while I was in design school, I got a job at a lighting showroom in Boston called Wolfers Lighting, which is a really great lighting showroom with really cool European stuff. And there's, designs that no other showroom in the area had. Things like, Artimity and Floss and, a lot of great Italian and European brands. So I learned about lighting by working for them and fell in love with it. And it kind of worked because I was a photographer and I was studying photography in school and did theater lighting and so it kind of made sense to get
Well,
involved
that's
with
where the
lighting.
contrast piece for you becomes so important from the theater and the photography background. Like, if you don't have light contrast in photography and theater, you're not doing your job. Like, that's what it's about,
It's a flat,
right?
boring thing that you're creating. It's like flat and boring. Yeah, I see a lot of really talented lighting designers that are doing big projects. And even like I look at how they light the trees around the hotel. And a lot of times they'll put like four lights around it and you get like really bright, even light on a tree, which makes the tree look well lit, but there's no shadow, so it's completely disinteresting. They're missing an opportunity because when you're lighting a tree, it should have a sculptural form. I light a tree the way that I used to light a ballet dancer, which is side lighting. The most of the lighting, if you go to a dance performance, is from the side. So you get a really great three-dimensional image of the dancer because you get a little bit of shadow in front and a little shadow behind them and bright light on the side. So they look rounded and three-dimensional.
Are we
So
seeing
how
a
to,
convert? I'm jumping in. I got another question right on this path, and you can go, Mr. Eric.
Oh.
I'm seeing a convergence in all areas of lighting, of theatrical and general lighting coming together, like especially in the new construction, hotel space, lobbies of important buildings. It's almost like these theatrical components are coming into it.
Yes.
Is that like the problem is you're making the thing more expensive and more technical. There's like downstream problems with that, controls and all this sort of stuff. What is your experience with that? Is it entering the home space and is it an overall good thing there? There's my question.
I mean, I agree and disagree with the premise. I think there's a lot of really great theatrically inspired design that's happening that can be low budget and that can be low maintenance. There are ways of using LEDs, LED channels to create some drama and interesting light sources that have the theatrical quality to them, but that can be low maintenance and delivered at a fairly low cost. Like if you go to a hotel, like if you're in Vegas, there's amazing lighting design. Like really, some of the best lighting design that I've seen has been in hotels in Las Vegas, because they get the top designers. So that stuff, that's very technical. That's very high maintenance. Like I totally agree in that type of case. In 5 or 10 years, if you have a change of staff and the person that had the knowledge of how to run the system is fired or moves on, and nobody's well trained, then the lighting starts to suffer. I've seen that happen in some places too. Some of the older hotels, you kind of get a sense that, oh, well, they're not putting the right bulbs in. The color temperature is different from one fixture to the next, which doesn't make, doesn't make any sense.
So how does someone officially become, like yourself, officially become a lighting designer?
I've talked to a lot of lighting designers and it doesn't look like there's a standard path. Some come from an engineering background. Some come, like I know one designer that was an electrician. I know a really good one that used to be an interior designer. So I think people just come from different paths. I mean, I had some theater lighting experience, some photography lighting experience, worked in a lighting showroom, went to design school. So I had, kind of the perfect convergence of experience and training to go into lighting design. But you basically kind of declare yourself a lighting designer. And then it's just a matter of how good is your work if you keep getting jobs. And I've done some really good jobs. Like I'm working on a 10,000 square foot house right now, and I'm working on two
That's
7,000
a
square foot
mansion. That's
houses.
not a house. That's a mansion.
It's a big house.
What would be
Yeah, I
what's
when
the line? What's the line? Mansion to house. What's the line?
I've actually Because one thing that we left out from my bio is that I also was a butler. I used to work in mansions, like the real deal,
Woo!
like 30,000 square foot, 40,000 square foot houses.
Wow,
Those are
that's a
mansions.
mansion.
10,000 is just a really big house. You know, after like 15, you start needing staff, and then it's a mansion.
Okay, I could see that. When you need staff, that qualifies it as a, when you need
That
staff,
qualifies as a mansion.
that
You need
qualifies
staff.
you need
Like when
staff.
it's too big to handle on your own, you need staff, that's a mansion.
So was the butler job one of the disasters that you mentioned in your bio or not?
It was a mixed bag. Yeah, that was a mixed bag. Like there was some, I've got some stories that I actually can't tell because I have NDAs.
Okay.
Because I work for some celebrities and I work for a lot of billionaires. And it was 5 years of really interesting experiences. And, but being in that environment was really helpful because, you know, I was in, you know, homes that are selling for $100, $200 million. You know, I worked in the house that Beyonce and Jay-Z just bought in Malibu. I worked in that house. So I got to be in that environment, which was Tadao Ando, famous architect, designed it. Really amazing, amazing piece of architecture and design. So I got to, like, you know, kind of work and live in that type of a space without really living there, but getting to know the space and how those sorts of homes, how people live in those homes and what those clients kind of demand. So it made me a better designer because I understand my clients better.
How many bodies did you bury in the backyard?
I can't say. I'm
NDA.
contractually obliged not to say.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
So as a lighting showroom, a lighting designer, someone who picks out light fixtures, there's nothing I hate worse than having to pick out a decorative fixture for someone because I'm the worst. But I could see you being good. But how do you stay up with it? Because there's hundreds, if not thousands, of choices. I know there's definitely thousands of choices. I'm saying companies, and then
Tens
within
of
that,
thousands of choices. Oh,
tens of
they're
thousands.
like, if you do a web search for a sconce, you're going to get, you know, 15, 20,000 options on like build.com. So, and then that's why clients freak out. And then they'll come to me and I'll give them three choices because I'll talk to them and get a sense of their taste. And when I have them walk through my showroom, I ask them, you know, don't, if you're looking for a chandelier, but tell me if there's a, you know, a sconce that you like, or another type of fixture that you like, because I want to get to know your taste and what you respond to visually. And then tell me about the space and what is needed. You know, do you need a light that is functional? Does it need to actually perform and light the space, or can it be purely decorative? And then if it's decorative, then what other furniture is there? I want them to show me pictures of the dining table and the chairs and the architecture of the room so that I can get a sense of the whole design and then make a smarter recommendation.
How do you
So I'm the
compensate
better
yourself?
search engine.
How do you compensate yourself? Like, do you charge for the consultation? Do you charge for the fixtures? Is it, how do you
In the
do that?
beginning, I didn't charge for consultations and I had people like take my advice and then go buy online, which was crazy.
Feels so odd.
So
Doesn't that feel so awful when people do that?
it's awful. It's like the worst, you know, because small businesses have struggled. Like I'm struggling, even though I'm doing well, I'm struggling. So that's just an insult. So I started charging, and I think people take you more seriously when you charge for a house visit. And then I have an hourly rate that I keep like comparable to what an electrician might charge. And then I also, if I'm doing a whole house design, I charge by the foot. So for a 10,000 square foot house, I charge $10,000 for my design and the meetings. And then I have them buy all the light fixtures through me. So lots of times the designer is separate from the showroom. So the purchasing and the design are separate. So I give them a better deal on the design end, so that I can, and I take more compensation through the lighting sales. So it's so I keep it kind of balanced. You
It's
know, a
also a
lot of
better deal
designers.
long term because, like, if there's a warranty problem or something like that, it all comes back to you. Like, that's a better deal for the
Yes.
client too. Like, you have
Yeah,
one
it's a
person, one angle. Yeah, exactly.
one stop shop. It makes it easier. I think my clients love it. You know, I get a lot of referrals.
So you don't ever separate it out. It's always if they work with you, they're buying it from you.
Yes, that is the agreement. And there are certain cases, you know, sometimes there's a designer on board and, you know, say that they're speccing something from Lindsay Edelman. Well, the price that they get from Lindsay Edelman is the same price that I get. So a certain super high-end fixtures, it's the interior designer and the lighting dealer get the same price. So they can just buy through the designer and that sort of thing. But everything else goes through me.
You're talking about monster houses and mansions. Is this ever going to be mainstream? My 3,500 square foot house, should I be hiring a lighting designer for it?
I've done 1,200 square foot houses.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's not the size of the house. It's the aesthetic of the owner. You know, if you have sensitivity to light and you appreciate good design, you should always hire a designer, you know, because as good as your taste might be, having a professional on board brings a whole, you know, a life history of design onto the job. And that really helps the end result be better for everybody. And it, especially if you get somebody that collaborates, like I'm very collaborative. I'll work with the interior designer. I'll help their ideas be better. And I work with the electricians during the installation process to make sure that they're making the right decision. Like if there's a beam in the way and you need to install a recessed light and you need to move it 6 inches one direction or another, that's an important difference. Mm-hmm. You know, if it goes in the wrong direction, you know, you only get, you know, 35 degrees worth of adjustability and you want to light a work of art, you might be too far away and you might like just light the bottom of the work of art. But if you get a little bit closer instead, then you just, you know, just have a sharper angle versus missing the work of art.
As you're like specifying design or the fixtures that go in, do you ever take into account the long-term maintenance of the fixture itself, like how it's going to get replaced or fixed down the line?
Yes. I think that's important. I think that's the function of good design. You know, it's not just about picking the prettiest thing. It's about picking something that's going to last. And I talk to the client about how they're going to be maintaining it. You know, in lots of cases with LED, it's going to be dead in 15 to 20 years. So you're going to have to replace it. You know, if that person plans on keeping the fixture forever, then you might not want to go with a dedicated LED. So that's all part of the process, you know, like how they're going to use the fixture in the end and how they're going to maintain it. Like bulbs, like if something needs a bulb and it's 20 feet off the ground, well, are you going to, you know, get scaffolding or an A-frame ladder to go change the bulb? Or do you want to just go with a dedicated LED that's going to hopefully last?
I take the bulb. I take the bulb because at least you can change a light bulb, right? And now
you have some leeway with the light bulb. You know, when you put in a recessed light, you know, especially ones that are really complicated, you've got a dedicated housing and it only works with a certain type of trim. Mm. So if you get sometimes I've used standard housings and LED trims that go into any, you know, 4-inch housing, because we want flexibility in the future, or we're not sure what the client, you know, if the client is indecisive, sometimes we sort of future-proof the design and the, you know, the client that might change their mind, because sometimes some things you're just married to, you know, the plaster and fixtures, recessed lights, you know, once those are in, you can't do anything.
And how often are you specifying or recommending controls like dimmers? And I know sensors probably not as much, but dimmers.
On almost every job. And sometimes I'm giving advice for systems that I'm not installing. Like a lot of the bigger houses have Homeworks or Crestron or other type of controls that are installed by somebody else. But I have a conversation with them about what we want the control to do. And then they specify and install and maintain that end of the job. But in smaller jobs, you know, I sell a lot of Adorn from Legrand, which is the square format dimmers and plugs. And they're just great. They just architecturally look great. They're well made and they perform well. So I use a lot of that.
And are you only specifying LED right now?
Well, I'm in California, so in some cases I have to.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't really have a choice. You know, there are certain like really unusual bulbs that we can still sell incandescents, but on standard bulbs, you know, we're not allowed. It's against the law.
Ooh, that was, you know what, William, that was more funner than I thought it was going to be honest with you. And you didn't get interrupted by one of your clients with the 10,000 square foot house that say now. But yeah.
Yes.
Thank you so much. We got to send the folks over to ETISSL.com. That's ETI Solid State Lighting. Greg Garrick.
Yeah, we talk about their flush mount lighting. They have decorative versions of it. They have everything from the practical to the decorative, everything in between, linear, round, oval, even recessed, all of it. ETI. Oof.
And of course, National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Do you have light bulbs in a warehouse? Light bulbs and light fixtures in a warehouse? This is your association. Come on down. Go to NAILD.org. We're getting together in August. That's right, in St. Paul, Minnesota, in August. Thankfully, not in February, in August. That's right. And we want to thank William George from Light and Home from coming on the show. And, of course, all of you listeners and viewers out there, and Get a Grip on Lighting Land on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Like it, share it, send it to your friends. But, of course, we are very grateful to all of you. Thank you for listening and watching. Bye for now.